You got together with the Monty Pythons for the first time in a long time recently. There are notorious, you know, artistic differences amongst those people. Was it a clash or a joy?
No, I mean, that's why Python is dead, because we all like each other now. I mean, what made that group interesting is that we all were, I wouldn't say warring all the time, but there was a constant tension in the air. But it was a tension about trying to be as good as possible, to be as excellent as we could be. And everybody felt they were the best. Each person did. And that, now we're just a bunch of old cuddly men who just like each other. And that doesn't make for good television.
You should just start a sitcom. You can be the wacky neighbor next door.
Actually, what I wanted to do in that New York show, which it was far too elaborate.
The reunion show.
Yeah, we were in the Ziegfeld Theater a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted the curtain to open, and the six of us, or five of us, would be there. Graham would be as a cardboard cutout. And we'd just be sitting around a table with waiters and having dinner and just talking amongst ourselves, and the audience could watch us eat and talk.
I think people would actually love that. So it'd be like My Dinner with Andre gone haywire.
Exactly. My Dinner with Andre and Andre and Andre and Andre and Andre and on and on and Andre.
So speaking of old things, one of the things apparently visually that you based a lot of, you know, the set pieces of Dr. Parnassus upon are these kind of old cardboard theaters that used to be sold as toys. And I understand you went to some place called the Museum of Childhood, which sounds like the title of a film you would make. What is the Museum of Childhood you went to find these cardboard theaters?
No, it's just this big hall full of dead babies. It's a horrible place. I don't know why people have a
museum. That's still a perfect movie for you.
It's basically, it's in London, and it has all these toys from, you know, the ages. And it's fantastic when you see what kids have played with and made into great bits of their imagination. A little piece of wood, you know, you spin it, and suddenly you've got a whole universe going on. And now all of our toys are so complicated, and they're basically doing the work for us, which is the, you know, that's the death of imagination. Nothing better than a couple sticks and a stone, and you can invent the world. And it did have these beautiful Victorian theaters, which I've always loved. There's something about those little worlds. It's a little world that in that you can put mountains and princes and fairy tales and you can anything in them. And I suppose that element of my childhood I cling to. I don't want to lose that. And films, in a sense, are a way of doing that, where I get to play with the toys again, and I get to make things real, even though it's all artifice that we're doing.
Hey, actually, I do need to ask you one question. Just like one memory of Hunter S. Thompson, just because he's a hero of mine.
Hunter Thompson, his day on film during Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That was another film. Fear and Loathing. He plays in one scene, the Matrix Club, where Johnny walks through this club with Jefferson Airplane playing in the background, and he passes a table and he looks back and he sees himself as Hunter Thompson sitting at the table.
It's actually Hunter Thompson.
And it is actually Hunter Thompson. Well, we're ready to go. We're already into overtime on that day. We had all these extras ready, and Hunter now says, I want to do it. I wouldn't be sitting in the room like that. That's not where I'd be. I said, what? And it ended up with Johnny Depp, Leila Nabulsi, the producer, and myself, like three sheepdogs around this recalcitrant sheep, trying to talk it into going and sitting on the table in there so we could do the shot. And
he doesn't even say anything in that scene. He just sits there.
And so we only got him there by putting the prettiest extra on that table. So he's now sitting, chatting to this girl, cameras rolling. We're moving through the crowd with Johnny. Johnny reaches the point he's supposed to. He stops, look back. Hunter's too busy talking to the girl. Take two. Start again. And this went on and on. We finally got it. But, I mean, Hunter was a nightmare. But the greatest thing was that at the end of the whole process, when we finally he saw the film, because he had avoided several screenings we'd set up. Johnny and I were terrified that he wouldn't like it. I think he was equally terrified he wouldn't like it, so he was avoiding the screenings. Finally, he saw it in a private home in Aspen, and somebody was there with the video cameras. The lights came up, and he was rolling around the floor in hysterics. It was the happiest day of my life.
One last thing, if you have one. Yeah. A joke. We start every episode with a joke, and ideally a clean, short joke.
I don't know how to tell jokes.
Come on.
I mean, a joke. I mean, I can't. Right now, I cannot think of a joke. It's this. I don't know why, but I have. It's I think a medical problem. But I can't tell jokes. I mean, Tell me, give me a starter for a joke and see if I can do it.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
I don't know. This is your thing.
I was telling them my part of the joke. I just do the who's there part.
What is it? How many X's does it take to screw in a light bulb? You know any light bulb jokes?
No. How many? Yeah, poles on. Nope. Can't do those. No, you've hit me. You've got me in my most vulnerable part of my psyche. I can't tell jokes.